you know, as I drove by, I honked and I supported, I waved, and I told them that I supported them. But in hindsight, there's more I could have done. And this has just been a learning experience. I didn't know then what I know now. And like Donna said, you have to pay it forward. You got to be there for everybody who is going through the same struggle.
So how can we stay in touch with BCTGM Local 364?
We do have a public Facebook page, which as any news that's coming out is always posted to that. People have been private messaging on there, wanting to learn more about what was going on with the strike, what's going on after the strike. And we have people on there who are messaging back and getting the word out. So that is one way that people can stay connected.
All right, so that's BCTGM Local 364. You can find them on Facebook. And that wraps it up for this evening's Labor Radio, this Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. on KBOO Portland. We've been talking with Mike Burlingham and Donna Jo Marks of Baker's Local 364, recently on strike at Nabisco. Good night and stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good.
It is the KBOO Fall Drive, and our theme is the sounds of democracy. Everything you hear on KBOO is, in its own way, the sound of democracy because we are a community radio station. Community radio is one of the most democratic types of media. We're non-commercial and independent. We're supported by our members so that we can keep the airwaves democratic, and continue to bring you the valuable voices of your community. Democracy is an experiment, and so is community radio. We're featuring content focused on democracy itself and democratic ideas across the schedule this drive, so if you'd like to support us, please visit us at kboo.fm/give or by clicking donate in the mobile app or mail to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue.
Good evening and welcome to Prison Pipeline. My name is Emma and I use she and her pronouns. And we have three guests today and we're going to be talking about a campaign to decriminalize sex work. Let's start with Elle. Would you like to introduce yourself, Elle?
Yeah. Hi, my name is Elle. I've lived in Portland since 2008. I've been doing contact sex work, mostly stripping since 2009, but I've done many types of work and we can talk about that. And my pronouns, I am a non-binary femme, so I like she and they.
Thank you. And Maxine, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Maxine Dugan. I've been working as a prostitute for 30 plus years, and I will probably be working as a prostitute for another 30 plus more. I live in California and Alaska, and my groups are the Erotic Service Providers Legal Education and Research Project out of California and the Community United for Safety and Protection out of Alaska. And I do travel for work. So, you know, before the pandemic, I traveled in and around Oregon State and hope to do that soon in the future.
Thank you. And Brandy, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Brandy. I've been a full service sex worker since 2008. I am a single mom. I'm a survivor of human trafficking. These days, I am independent in my escorting, and it's been a pretty busy year for me. I started a small business, and I have delved into advocacy. So there's my intro.
Great. Thank you so much. So we're going to talk tonight about the campaign to decriminalize sex work here in Oregon. And I think, Elle, I think you're really the person to start the conversation. Can you tell us about what's going on with that?
Yes, thank you, Emma. So myself, and I know many others who live here in the community of Portland, care a lot about these issues and harm reduction and criminal justice reform and consent. So I've been working independently to pursue different public education about decriminalization of sex work for a few years. In late January, I was contacted by a lobbyist that I used to work with who said that Representative Rob Nose was sponsoring a bill, House Bill 3088, that would decriminalize sex work. And that would be pretty easy to do. You could just strike the statutes that punish consensual adults and maintain the ones that address things like force, fear, fraud, trafficking, people underage. And so I said, heck yeah, I want to be part of this. And I have reached out to as many people online or in person who wanted to build a committee. We did not receive support in the legislation, despite Representative Nose's support. So we're pursuing any avenues we can, and that includes an upcoming, a potential upcoming ballot measure so the voters of Oregon can decide for themselves.
Yeah, Rob Nose is great. We've had him on Prison Pipeline before. He's
awesome.
Yeah, he's a really great representative.
I love hearing that. I agree.
So Elle, can you tell me a little bit more about like what would be involved in a ballot initiative? And you know, how's that going so far?
It is in the very preliminary baby steps. We need funding to do something like that. We would need 112,000 signatures from voters to get it on the ballot, I believe. So all of this takes time and energy and people. So what we're doing right now is, you know, coming on shows like this and writing and going to social media, asking people to support us and also educating people who would support us if they understand how decriminalization of sex work always lowers transmission rates of STIs and always lowers violence in those areas. And research says that over and over again.
Thank you. Maxine, can you talk about the issue of decriminalizing sex work and your participation in this? How would this benefit sex workers?
Well, it would decriminalization, removing the statutes that criminalize our right to negotiate for our own labor and our own safe work conditions, would be a benefit not only to our community, but also to the greater public health issue, you know, where workers would have the right to negotiate and use, you know, safety devices on our jobs. You know, that's very important to have the right to be able to do that. And under the current criminal statutes, prostitution is criminalized on a state-by-state basis. You know, pulling out that condom can be the means upon which you're going to be arrested for prostitution. And I've been arrested for prostitution several times. You know, without even pulling out the condom, you know, I have three kids, and, you know, it's just been devastating to be arrested for prostitution. A prostitution arrest, you know, generally means that you're going to be out of work. You know, it's your pink slip, you're out of work. It's your move along slip. You know, you're forced to migrate into a different area or, you know, into a different state even. You know, where you don't know people, you don't know the business, you don't know the terrain. You know, the new girls are always, you know, the targets of scammers and the violent. And so, you know, being arrested for prostitution, you know, causes more risk to people in the sex trade. But also, you know, my kids lost the benefit of my income, you know, when I'm arrested and I'm forced to be out of work and then forced to move along. You know, that had a devastating effect on my kids and on my family, you know, who had to pick up the pieces. You know, another time when I was arrested, I was with a really good friend of mine who was in the middle of a mental health episode, and we were both arrested and we were both put in jail. And, you know, as a result of that, you know, she ended up back in the psych ward as a result of that really, really traumatic experience. And, you know, they didn't need to arrest us. You know, there was no probable cause for arresting us. There were no charges ever filed. You know, so, you know, I'm really dedicated to, you know, removing the criminal statutes from prostitution.
How, Brandy, would you like to comment on this discussion we've had so far from your perspective?
Sure. So, as a survivor of human trafficking, I could attest to how criminalization has only harmed me way more than anything else that they were trying to do. The police organized sting operations, they label them as human trafficking operations. Sometimes they even go so far as to say that it's a child predator operation, but they're actually just arresting consenting adults. And the real victims, the real human trafficking victims, most of these are young women that come from foster care. They're poor. They just want a way out. And prostitution is that opportunity for them to get out of poverty. But the fact that it's criminalized, there's nowhere that these girls or trans or anyone that wants to be a prostitute, there's nowhere for them to go and seek education. So that only leaves them with pimps. And that's a whole other situation. Decrim would open job opportunities for sex work educators. It would reduce human trafficking because we would have a place to go. Like, where do we go right now? You know what I mean? Like, we go to pimps. And the way that the game is, you either are brought in by a pimp or you were fortunate enough to escape your pimp. And then there's very few that know someone that knows someone. And the times that I've been arrested, they did not offer me any human resources out of my situation. They labeled me a criminal. They charged me with prostitution, and it's on my permanent record. It further suppressed me into poverty because I've been denied housing. I've been denied employment. The list goes on.
Thank you. Al, would you like to comment on what's gone on in the conversation so far? And also, I'd like to ask you a little bit more about the recent legislative campaign.
Yeah, certainly. So my experience is different than Brandy's and Maxine's in the way that I've never been arrested. I also have never primarily hustled through selling sex. I've done webcam and sold porn and sexting and, you know, in-person dates that are very vanilla and non-sexual. I've been a non-sexual cuddler. I have a lot of privilege to be able to publicly speak about how other people are harmed by criminalization. Something Brandy said earlier, and this is, I believe her speaking to her experience, is a lot of people working full service, especially when they're young and poor, is they're either brought in by pimps or they know a friend who teaches them how to hustle. Brandy, correct me if I'm wrong. And what I have experienced and witnessed in my 12 years of mostly legal, still very regulated and stigmatized work, but legal work, is that because these venues for stripping exist, or for peep shows exist, or webcam platforms exist, it is not so underground. We are able to file our taxes. You know, we are able to show up to these places. Criminalization, really, like Brandy said, if there's harm being done, you cannot go to the police or even maybe a hospital if the work you do to survive is deemed a crime. So I just wanted to break it down more for listeners how the infrastructure is built out to actually really prevent the people who are most in need of help, resources, rescue, education, healthcare. It really prevents those people from being able to get those things the most. And one thing I would like to add, when we're talking about decriminalizing sex work, we want to be really careful to not say legalizing sex work, because this gives people in power, legislators, business owners, the ability to regulate, restrict, control who could do the work, when and where. An example would be brothels that in America, they only exist in the least populated counties. In a few counties in Las Vegas, you have to drive through the desert to get there. That's assuming you have a car and you can afford these things, and the same to work there. And then if you work there, they take maybe 40% before taxes. But yet everyone else in the state of Nevada and the United States can't go and work in those brothels or travel to them to work or be a client. So they're still very arrestable. So when people say, oh, we have legalized prostitution in America, hardly. It's not accessible at all. And it needs to be more so, because touch is a human right and it's a workers' right issue, which is something Maxine and Brandy also brought up.
Can I add something?
Please.
Another thing, decrim would just remove that negative stigma that comes with sex workers / prostitutes, because from my experience, I've been a sex worker for the majority of my adult life. And my experience, I'm not open with that in my initial meetings with people, like in public or at my kid's school. Like that's a big secret, because they react negatively. And then in the situation where someone might have found out, or I might have felt comfortable enough to tell them, they were always shocked, like, oh, I never would have expected that you were a prostitute. Like what do you mean? Like, they assume that we're just decrepit, drug addicted criminals, and that is so far from the truth. We're human beings. A lot of us are parents. We have families, we have friends, you know, like, it's emotional for me because I've experienced this for so long, but yeah.
Thank you, Brandy. I want to say, even if you are a decrepit, drug addicted human, like, we need, you know, they need the most love. So
exactly. They need healing. We're all just out here trying to make it at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Can I jump in for a couple of things I felt were really important to highlight is that we want decriminalization as opposed to legalization right now, because we need the prostitute nation to be able to come out from under the underground to define for ourselves what type of support regulations that we would need. And the workers need to be at the center of that, not the government. You know, we don't want to work in the Walmart brothel. You know, we don't want to be you know, in a situation where we're going to be ghettoized in certain areas of town. You know, there's hardly any research on, you know, the ways in which people in the sex industry work. And we need to get, you know, custody of, you know, some actual numbers about the state of, you know, the prostitute nation. The other issue is that, you know, we want to see reparations before we see legalization. And what I mean by that is we need to see that all of these criminal offenses are removed off of people's records. Because when you even have that arrest for prostitution on your record, you can and will be discriminated against in employment efforts. I have friends who have been arrested who can't get a job, you know, for ride shares or for delivery services. There's discrimination in education tracks, you know, to be certified, like to be a nurse or something. If you have that prostitution arrest on your record, you can be denied that certification, you know, like a teaching certification. It needs to be some anti-discrimination legislation laid down in housing, that people cannot discriminate against us in getting housing or in family court. Or right now we have the discrimination that's being attacked. You know, our community is being attacked, you know, by these antis who have lobbied the financial institutions like Visa and MasterCard to remove their and restrict their platforms from what kind of content can be posted. Legal content can be posted online. So we need some anti-discrimination around those financial institutions. And that's what I mean by reparations. Thanks.
Elle, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the recent legislative campaign to decriminalize sex work here in Oregon. Can you tell me what happened with Rob Noss, and was there support within the state legislature for this? If we wanted to undertake a campaign like this again in 2 years here in Oregon, what would we need to do?
So Representative Rob Noss has been very supportive. He seems to understand the issues as well as a civilian can. And a civilian is sex worker jargon for a non-sex worker. And because you just don't fight the battles we do, and there's a lot of things you'll never understand. For example, on June 3rd, some members of our committee, which includes not only sex workers, but also academics, doctors, researchers, human trafficking, advocacy organizations, or anti-human trafficking advocacy organizations, spoke and testified and gave information and personal story as to why we need decrim. And the committee that heard us in their previous voting and in the previous bills they have supported, they are Nordic model supporters. This means that they believe they are helping sex workers by arresting or criminalizing our clients. There is a lot of research and personal story to tell you why this does not help people and still makes trafficking harder to actually address. And people who are really stuck in their beliefs because of their different misgivings about sex work or their horophobic attitudes about it really, really didn't want to hear all of our information because it didn't match with their beliefs. I don't want to name names because we're hoping that we can put enough public pressure on these elected officials that their constituents can demand that they support decrim, because there's no good reason not to. If you know, when I briefly worked and trained as a lobbyist in Salem, it was apparent, if anyone knew that I was a sex worker, it was apparent who had biases. And I'll tell you, the Republicans, Democrats, it makes hardly any difference. People feel anti-sex work or they resent whores for many different reasons. I can say that. Brandy and Maxine can say prostitute. I ask that civilians don't, because it's typically used as a slur. So some of the language you're hearing us use, it's not okay to mimic if you're not a part of our world. We're really hoping that we can do enough media and get some funding so that we can do maybe, I don't know, TV media or more on the web or publicly funded radio or something. Because if people are upset that their tax money is being wasted on arrests of adults that are just trying to feed themselves, then they have the power to make changes. And we really, really invite them to help us try to do that.
Thank you. Would anyone else care to comment on that?
Yeah. Professor Barbara Bentz just came out with a book called Paying for Sex in the Digital Age. She is a professor out of University of Las Vegas. And it's a really good book in that it actually has some actual data and some actual research on our customers. And, some of the reviews on it, have said that the data proves that the clients are not the chief source of exploitation and violence that characterizes, some of the sex industry, that full decrim, needs to include our clients. Arresting our clients is, like arresting Walmart workers. If you want to stop the exploitation of Walmart workers, then according to those who purport to arrest our clients as a means to stop exploitation in our industry, then you would go arrest all of these Walmart, shoppers. And, that's just, that's not a tenable means to end exploitation on people's jobs. We in the sex industry, the workers are not calling for the criminalization of our customers. To call for the criminalization of our customers is to be in an unfair, labor practice, because you're going against what the workers want. And it doesn't work. We know that arresting our customers is a failed approach. It's a failed policy. Some other States or countries have tried it, and the research has shown clearly that it doesn't work to end exploitation. You know, you have to give people the actual, you know, rights to be able to negotiate for our own labor and our own safe work conditions. You know, we're adults, we can do it. And, you know, we just need the support of the people to stop criminalizing us.
Brandy, you said something before that really touched me, and I also find relatable, and maybe Maxine will too, but you said that you were grateful for your clients because you'd been able to have a life.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, when I was in my human trafficking situation, my client, well, a good client of mine is the guy that helped me escape.
Wow.
He literally came to my rescue. I was in a very abusive, toxic situation. He had complete control over me. He took any identification that I had. I was never allowed to hold cash. As soon as I did an appointment, he was there to pick up the money. I pretty much had no life outside of working and giving him my money. And my clients were never the problem. They would bring me gifts, they would invite me out, they would treat me more kind than I've ever been treated. And I finally realized, like, I don't need this guy. I can get my own clients, but I need help getting out. And a regular that I had at the time, I told him everything, and he was like, we're gonna help you get you out. And literally, when my pimp was asleep in the next room, he came and got me with the clothes on my back. He bought me a plane ticket to come to my home state because I was like on the other side of the country. And he sent me off with $500 so I would have like something to start on. And he kept in touch with me. And, you know, if it wasn't for him, I would probably be dead right now. And I wouldn't be here for my children. And since then, I took control of my life, and my clients put me in a position to have stability. They put me in a position of independence. They put me in a position where I have choices. Like, I don't have to live paycheck to paycheck or month to month, and I know how that's been because I've been there. But they give me the opportunity to rise above everything that I've been through in my past. And not for my client base, I would absolutely be dead. Absolutely.
Thank you so much for sharing that. We have about 2 minutes left on the show, so I'd like to give everyone a chance to kind of summarize, and if there's any information that they'd like to share at the end of the show, such as how to get involved in the campaign, this would be the time to do that. Would you like to start, Elle?
Yeah, thank you. So I think maybe a major takeaway and something I really want to drive home is that paying for touch does not make a person inherently abusive. That is a myth that our clients are perverts and sickos. All people are capable of doing harm, but misogyny, sexism, transphobia, these are the motivators for why people feel entitled and attack people. It's not because of sex work or touch work. Those are compassionate ways to be and to live and how to exist. Also check out Dr. Barbara Brentz was mentioned. She was one of the people who testified. Dr. Angela Jones is a Black woman who also worked in webcam and wrote a book called Camming. So that might give some insight into some of the things that are going on with online criminalization and restriction. And if people want to get involved with what we're doing here, you do not have to be from Oregon. You can be anywhere in the world. Contact us at OregonSexWorkers.com. Yes, we will be updating the website. And then our Twitter is at ORSexWorkers.
Thank you. And Maxine, Brandy, thank you so much for joining us. Would you like to share anything at the close of the show?
Thank you for having me. And I hope that whoever's listening will learn something positive from this.
I hope that people join the Oregon campaign in any way that they can. There's lots of ways to participate. It's really important to support Oregon.
Thank you. If we can do it here, we could do it lots of other places.
Mm-hmm. Thank you all for joining us. We've been talking tonight with Elle, Maxine, and Brandy about the campaign to decriminalize sex work here in Oregon. Thank you so much for joining us on Prison Pipeline.
It is the KABU Fall Drive, and our theme is the sounds of democracy. KABU is a nonprofit organization. Less than 10% of listeners are members of KABU. KABU is 52 years old and one of the oldest community radio stations in the country and one of the oldest media institutions in Portland. Volunteer powered, we have over 300 volunteers. KABU has trained thousands of people how to make radio, all for free thanks to the support we receive from our members. We're independent, community supported, volunteer powered radio. KABU programming focuses on local communities, artists, activists, people. Again, if you'd like to support us, please visit us at kabu.fm/give or by clicking donate in the mobile app. Mail to KABU at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad.
Sweetest of love, I found
out. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Today on our weekly roundtable, the crisis at the border and the continuum of the devaluation of the lives of some of us. Meanwhile, in Capitol Hill, Democrats are infighting on Biden's Build Back Better plan and infrastructure. Can President Biden calm the waters? And there's a row over the debt ceiling with a looming government shutdown. And again, a debate over tax.